Accession number 30395, Mr. Barry Summerfield, Reel 8. Now, what happens next? You're guarding the airfield. What's happening? You don't dig in or...
No, there's nothing like that, because we were certainly not going to stay there for very long.
Was the airfield in use? Was there much...
Oh, yeah, there was... The Americans were using... The planes we were guarding were P-51 Mustangs. The old Second World War Mustangs. But they had on there all sorts of jets, sabres, and they had meteors, the British meteors. I believe that they were piloted by Australians. I'm not 100% sure, South Africans. We didn't actually have anything to do with them.
But it was busy then, they were flying in.
Very busy, yeah, very busy.
And obviously you weren't under air attack, but what happened next then?
And then it'd be about that point when...
This is still December?
No. We're into January, February now. Certainly January. And then for some reason, they shipped us back to Japan. Now, they didn't take the tanks back to Japan. They just took us. We were taken to Kure, and we went into the...
Now, how did you get to Kure? Was it a ship?
Yeah, we went back by ship, but by old Japanese troop ship, I think. Didn't take long, anyway.
What happened when you... It's not far, is it?
No, it wasn't very far.
And this is what, February?
Must have been around about February. And we never did find out actually why they took us back there.
Now, what were you doing at Kure camp?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Had it been set... I mean, it was a great, dirty, great big camp later on, you know, and set up as a depot and training camp.
Yeah, no, it was nothing like that then. It was just a small camp. And I don't know how we were doing there, why we were taken back, but we were. But it was only Air Squadron that went back. That I do know. Just the one squadron went back for some reason. We were back there for about a month.
What were you doing it?
Nothing. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. Just sitting on our bunks all day. Weren't marching, weren't doing, we didn't do any guards, we didn't do anything. We were just there.
Now, did you get out of the camp at all?
Yeah, went down to Kure itself.
What was that like? I mean, it's Japanese. I mean, you know, it's Japanese, all very foreign.
Oh, it was totally foreign there. I mean, nobody spoke English. At all. None of our lads spoke Japanese.
So how did you get on with them? Because it's only, what...
We didn't have anything to do with them, really. The only Japanese we actually sort of spoke English were the people that worked in the camp. You know, the waitresses, people like that.
You getting all right with them?
Yeah, seemed to, yeah.
There was no sort of resentment on either side over the war?
Oh, no, I don't think so, no. That never came into it. Not that I know of. I mean, I went on R&R once to Tokyo.
That's later, though.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
So, you know, anything happened at all? Any recollections of things at Kure?
No, not really. Nothing at all. It was very, very boring. And it was... the weather was sort of... It was like spring. Spring there. So it must have... Well, whatever time of the year it was. But we stayed there for a month and then we came back.
Oh. So you think... February to March?
February to March, probably. To March, that would be about right, because April was the Battle of the Imjin, wasn't it? Round about April, right. That'd be it, so we came back in March.
Now, where did you go to?
Well, when we came back.
Back to Seoul, or
when? No, I think we must have gone to Busan. And then, how the hell we got up to...
So you sailed back to another, just the same way?
Yeah, we sailed back to Busan. And then I think we went up by train to Seoul. Now, what the hell, now how we came in contact again with the tanks, or what we did with the tanks, I do not know. I do not know.
So you don't know when you rejoined your unit? Well, you know, got your tanks and everything.
It would have been March. March, sometime in March.
But where? Where were they? I mean, up at the Koh Ang San area?
I don't
or
know. Well, they would have been in a lager somewhere because there was a whole bloody squadron of them. Is that me?
So what happened when you did rejoin them? Right.
This is a bit that I'm a bit hazy about. Now, I can't remember how we picked the tanks up or where they were. But they must have been somewhere around Saul. They had to have been because we wouldn't have driven all that far. I don't remember going up on a train, so I think we went up on a train to get to Saul. So they must have been around Saul somewhere. And then we loaded up the usual way with food and ammunition, and we headed for the engine.
That's the Koeng Sanger.
No, that was it. That was it. That was it. No, air position was in the Happy Valley. We weren't far from the Northumberland Fusiliers. It was like a triangle.
When it is in the Koeng Sanger area.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And you're in Happy Valley.
We were in Happy Valley. Yeah.
Now, what's the setup? When you get there, what's going on in Happy Valley? What's
right to. Our right was a battery of 122mm New Zealand artillery. They were to the right of us. Now in front of us on hills were the Northumberland Fusiliers. To the right of them was the Royal Horse Rifles, and on the far left were the Gloucesters, and that was the position. It was like a triangle, in other words.
And the engine was behind you? The engine was behind you?
No, the engine was in front of us.
Right, okay.
Behind us, there was some RASC. There was a lot of trucks, I remember that, somewhere or the other back there.
Now, what had the rest of them been doing? Well, I mean, you know, you were B squadron.
Don't know. Have no idea. We never had a... You see, that was the thing. When we were out there, we had little contact with each other. Even the Battle of the Engine, we didn't have contact with the other squadrons. Maybe the squadron commanders did. That I don't know. But we, as such, never ever saw them. Because they were always such a distance apart.
So what happens first? You're in. What's the setup? You're now. Does the rations differ?
Well, we were lagered. We were lagered up, right? We had tents up and everything.
Now, can you explain what lagered up means?
Well, it means that you settle down there. That's where it's like almost like a tank park in a way, except that you're obviously under active service. Now we did. I seem to remember start getting hot food coming up in metal containers. So we were getting food from somewhere, obviously. Where that would be coming from, I don't know.
And what was it like?
It was always stews, mainly. Mainly stews.
British cooks, then?
Oh, definitely British, yeah. It wasn't American at all.
Enough of it? Enough?
Oh, yes, yeah. And we got beer ration. We were getting a beer ration.
And what was the beer ration?
I think we got... 4 bottles a day, I think.
Each man,
I think.
They're pint bottles, then, as well. Like
yeah, Japanese bottles. A soy beer. Remember that.
Any good?
It was all right. Yeah, I can remember. Wait a minute. Now, we must have had that beer before, because thinking about the frozen. Yes, now I'd forgotten about that. We did have the beer before, because when we were... I've got to recap now because this is something else which I've remembered.
No, tell me.
When we were coming back from Pyongyang, we also picked up acai beer at these American depots. And one night, we'd left a case alongside the tank. And when we got up in the morning, they frozen solid, the whole lot. Absolutely frozen solid. All the glass had broken away. And there were 4 pints of beer there, frozen. I remember that. So we must have had a side beer for quite a long time.
Was it any good? I mean,
cause it was all right. It was beer. You know, I mean, it was a drink.
What size glass bottle was it? I mean, are they pint bottles? Or
well, they were, I would think, probably about half a litre, because they wouldn't have had pints.
Of course, sorry, yeah.
So I would think probably half a litre, about that size. I can't remember.
Did you have a rum ration?
Yeah, we had a rum ration before we went into action.
But is that the only time?
I don't remember us getting a rum ration normally.
And how did you get it issued, the rum ration?
Bloke came round with it, is all I can remember. Quartermaster, I think, came round with it. It was a lot of rum. It wasn't just a little tot that you get. It was bloody half a mouthful. Remember, we had that before the Battle of the Engine, but I don't remember getting it other than that. But I think it was around about that particular point when I got promoted.
Before you went into action on the Imogen?
Yeah, before.
Now tell us that. So you're promoted to what? To
Sergeant.
You were Lance Corporal before. When have you gone to? Had you been a corporal?
Yeah, I'd been a corporal. Yeah, I can't remember when I got corporal, but I was promoted on the field to Sergeant.
Now, why do you think they picked you out?
I don't know. It's always been a mystery. I really do not know, because we already had a troop sergeant, right? That was Sergeant Canaby. He was my troop sergeant. He's dead now anyway, so. He was my troop sergeant, and I do not know why they put another sergeant in the same troop, why they promoted me, but they promoted me.
Now, what difference, I mean, how did you get on with the lads? You've just been one of the lads all your time in the army. Now you're going to be a senior NCO, a sergeant is really, isn't he? How did it change the way you got on with them?
Obviously, it made a slight difference because, you know, like when you're a sergeant, it's not like being a corporal. I mean, when you're a sergeant, it is a bit hierarchy, as it were, you know, you're a bit important. So, there was a bit of difference, obviously.
Did it change the way you talk to people, or?
I suppose so, to a certain extent. It must have done. That's the nature of the game, isn't it? You know, whether you want to be or you don't want to be. If I took the job, then that was it. I've got to act the part.
So would you let people call you by the first name? Yeah, would they call you Barry, or would they call you Sergeant?
No. Then it became Sergeant. There wasn't that sort of familiarity anymore. Not once you were a sergeant.
And what about the other NCOs? How'd you get on with them?
Fabulous. We had a marvellous Sergeant Major.
Who was he?
Roy Valance. He's still alive.
Now, Roy Valance, we just checked, it's the same one. Now, Roy Valance, we've already interviewed, quite a long interview with, and I thought it sounded familiar. Can you tell us a bit, as much as you can remember about Roy Valance, what impressions he made on you? Because he was a senior NCO, and how you met him and all the rest.
Yeah, he was a company sergeant major, right? Now, I met Roy at Warminster. Roy was the company sergeant major then, right? He sort of took me under his wing, and that was it. I always got along really, really well with Roy. I respected him.
What was so good about him?
He never had to shout and scream or anything like that. He just, you knew he was authority. Hang on, stop. Yeah. Well, as I say, I first met Roy at Warminster. And he took me under his wing because I was the newest boy in the regiment then, or certainly in the squadron. And then I went right the way through with Roy. Everywhere he went, I went. And then eventually, as I say, I got promoted to sergeant on the field just before the Battle of the Engine. I don't know why I got promoted. This is something that I've never fathomed out or even known why it happened, but they did promote me. I stayed in the same troop, so we actually had two troop sergeants. But I got along well with Roy Carnaby, who was the other troop sergeant. So
Roy Valance was your company sergeant major.
He was the company sergeant.
And what was he like as a company sergeant major? What was good at? Why was he so good at the job? What was he looking for in a
He
man?
Was efficient. He knew exactly what he wanted for the squadron. He knew exactly what he wanted the squadron to do. And the squadron just did it because they respected him. He never had to shout and scream. Obviously, when he was on parade, he was on parade. When he was in the mess, then he was Roy, and that was it. But only when he was in the mess. Other than that, he was company sergeant major. That was it. He never went above that position while I was in the regiment, but once I left, I understand he really went quite well. He did quite well.
I think he finished up a major.
He did finish up major.
Now, what about the other chap you mentioned, the other NCO?
Roy Carnaby. Yeah.
Now, what was Roy Carnaby?
He was the other troop sergeant. He was the troop sergeant, in actual fact, because he was the senior man. Now, Roy had been with the regiment in the desert. That's how he was getting on of it, Roy. He did his time. Apparently, he did his full time and eventually finished up retiring.
Now, what was he like as a troop sergeant?
He was a good bloke. Rough and ready. A real desert soldier. He's like you'd expect a desert soldier to be.
Did he act a role model to you? I mean, did you try and be like him? Or
No. He was a bit too hard.
So you tried to be more like Roy Vallance?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, in a way, yeah.
Now, what about the officers? How did you get on with the officers? Now you're a senior NCO, getting young second lieutenants coming through, subalterns.
Well, yeah, you were. Mind you, funny enough, I always had Lieutenant Troughton. He was always my troop sergeant.
Did that? You never got another one?
And I never had another one.
Now, how did you get on with him in that difficult, sometimes difficult relationship of sergeant and lieutenant?
No, well, by the time I got to be sergeant, Chris, by this time, was an experienced officer.
Chris Troughton, yeah.
And by that time, he was an experienced officer. Remember, he'd been in the troop at Warminster with me. So we'd been together in the troop right from the start.
So you didn't have any trouble with him?
No. It wasn't as if he had to come to me to ask advice for anything, because he knew it all. But some of the other lieutenants that you bumped into, you know, second lieutenants, that they would have no idea what they were doing.
So, did you have a sergeant's mess before we go on to the Battle of Imjee? Because I think that...
No, what we had a sergeant's tent.
Now, what did that offer? I mean, what was it like?
It was just a tent, had a table and a chair in it, which nobody else had, and that's where we kept our drinks and things like that. Remember, the one privilege that you had as a sergeant in action, you get a bottle of scotch a week.
Now, was that any good? A lot of people don't drink spirits. I mean, you know, did you drink spirits or start to?
I started to, yeah. I wasn't going to bloody waste it, was I, a bottle of scotch? Mind you, we did it occasionally, keep the scotch to one side, to barter for things that we wanted from the Americans. Because they were dry, you see, they couldn't have any booze. So they'd give their arm and a leg for a bottle of scotch. Or a Jeep. I think the car and rope for a Jeep was 5 bottles of scotch.
Was there a lot of bartering we used in Scotland?
Oh, well, quite a bit, yeah. If you could get to somewhere, it was a bit difficult for us because we were mobile all the time, you see, but if you could get to somewhere where you were not too far from an American depot, then you could do well, if you wanted anything.
So it was just a currency. A bottle of whiskey was currency, good currency.
Oh, yeah, no, you get quite a lot from that. As I say, about 5 bottles of whiskey, you get a Jeep.
I mean, really?
Yeah, really, a Jeep. Hey, you find the right guy, the right quartermaster, especially if he was coloured. Don't print that, right? But if he was coloured and you offered him 5 bottles of scotch, you'd get a Jeep with a 50 calibre machine gun and ammunition thrown in. Oh, you would.
Now, so what happened? I mean, was it long after you joined the unit that the Battle of the Imjee happened? You know,
About a month, I think.
Happening now? What are you doing in that month?
Right now, we were doing a lot of patrols.
Now, is that patrols with the tanks or patrols with?
No, patrols with the tanks.
Now, how did you patrol in that area?
Well, no, what we did is we always went out with the infantry. Right, one of the units of infantry would be with us, so we would go out as a squadron and we'd have a company, say of the Northumberland Fusiliers or particularly the Ulster Rifles, because we were both Irish regiments, you see. So we had a very close affiliation to the RUR. Still have, of course, obviously.
Now, so where would you go on the patrols?
Always towards the enemy.
Do you know which hills or which...
No, what you did is they would say, right, I mean, we did one particular patrol. We took the whole squadron out, not just the troop. Pardon me. And
now let's if we look at that patrol. So how would you think of that one? What sort of briefing would you have?
Right, we'd be told what we were going to do, what the object of the exercise was in the first place. The object of the exercise was always the same: to try and find the enemy. And they were very elusive. They weren't like all dug in slit trenches and things like that. They were a hell of a job to find. In this particular one, we were told that a probe by the Americans from the 7th Cavalry was going to do a similar thing to us, about 5 miles to the east, and we were supposed to meet up after some number of hours.
Now, on this occasion, the infantry unit, was this the Royal Ulster Rifles that you were with? That
yeah, we were with the Ulster Rifles that day.
Now, so, any other preparations you'd have to make? As a troop sergeant, were you commanding a tank, or were you, I should have asked
no,
you before.
No, I was commanding the tank.
Yeah, so this is a new role, because you've been the wireless operator.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
Have you started commanding the tank?
Well, I suppose when I can't remember as a corporal. I don't think I was ever the I might have been the troop corporal, so I might have done, when we came back to the Imogen.
It's around about that time.
About that time, so I was troop corporal, well, so I would have been in command then.
So tell me what your role was commanding the tank. Just go through it in detail. But, when you went on this patrol, what exactly are you doing as a sergeant commanding
well,
the tank?
Well, first and foremost, you've got to make sure that the driver maintenance man who does the maintenance role has got the tank in good order so that we're ready to move. You've got to make sure that the wireless operator has all the codes that we're going to use that day so that he knows what to tune the radio into and how to control everything. You've got to make sure that the wireless operator has also loaded all the ammunition on. That was his job, putting the ammunition in the tank. Then you've got to give the gunner the coordinates of what we might need so that should he need to fight, he knows what we're going to be doing. And then I've got my map case all marked out with what we're supposed, where we're supposed to be going.
And you got that from the briefing?
I got that from the briefing. Because when we had the briefing, it would be sergeants and upwards would be briefed.
So there's no group of...
That's it.
Now, so you've got all that.
Yeah.
Now you're heading out. Now, what's the terrain you're going into? Like, because I see the popular picture, and the picture I have in my mind, is big rivers and big hills. And it doesn't feel like tank country in my head, you know.
It wasn't really good tank country.
Can you explain what sort of terrain
right, well
it
in
was?
In this instant we were going down valleys.
Do you know which valley?
No, they were all valleys, all different
but
valleys.
Just name
yeah. There were no names. Well, there might have been names, but no real names. But you'd be in these valleys, and some of them eventually might be narrow, some of them would be as wide as a mile, you don't know.
But you'd always be in the valleys?
Right, in the valleys, yeah.
You wouldn't go on the hills?
No. Not when you were out on patrol, you wouldn't. And the infantry was supposed to go on the hills on either side of you.
Now, what sort of vegetation's in the valleys? Is right, it paddy fields, or is
in, it... In this particular instance, what happened on this patrol, I was lead tank. I was lead tank all day, actually.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that if anybody shoots, they're going to shoot you first. Because you're the very front man. So we were the very front tank. And we stayed that way all day, actually. I didn't get relieved. Right until we came back at night.
So that must be quite a stress.
It was a strain, yeah. It was a strain on the crew as well.
Now, what sort of terrain... We've done the terrain, you're in the valley, but what sort of... What are you going through? Paddy fields or what?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, it could be a flat valley with nothing in it at all.
But at some
point or the other, you knew full well that you'd hit paddy fields. And the paddy fields would go up in tiers, obviously. Now, the problem with paddy fields is they were actually... Whilst they smell awful, obviously, because they were full of human excreta.
They used that as fertiliser?
Yes, they used that as fertiliser. Now, and they used the animal stuff as well. So it was all mixed together. But the thing is, most of these paddy fields have been there for centuries, and they were deep. So you had to be very careful. You couldn't go charging in a tank. You had to go slowly and carefully so that you didn't bog down, because if you bogged down, that was it. You were finished. And so we started out, and off we went like that all day.
Now, so you'd just be... How far between the tanks? So you're the lead tank. Where's the second tank? And is it immediately behind you, or is it on...
Not immediately, about 30 or 40 yards.
But would it follow your tracks?
No, it would follow me. It would keep me in sight.
But it wouldn't go on the same tracks.
No, no. Well, he would, yeah, probably, if he had any sense.
Was there a risk of mines?
Oh, yeah, there's always a risk of mines. You know, you wouldn't see them until you hit them, so that was it.
I mean, did they plant a lot of mines, their side, or was it more like you'd run into your own mines? You know, because it can happen.
On this side of the Imjin, yes, I ran into my own mines about three times. Because they just, the Americans threw them everywhere. Or it might have even been our own people who threw them everywhere. But you never knew it until you got there, and then you saw them.
What about the Korean or Chinese mines? Any of them? Or is it more, it really is
no,
more our
No, it
own.
Really was, on the north side, or rather on the south side of the Imjin, it was our own mines. Never saw any Chinese there. Although I don't know them for sure, about six or seven different occasions we've come across infantry who've wandered into a minefield and got blown up. You know, Korean infantry, Korean porters had a habit of doing it, and in some cases their own lads walked into minefields. Whether they were air minefields or minefields that the Chinese had planted, I don't know.
So you're going forward. So how far are you going? What happened? What do you remember?
We don't
that?
Know. We're just told to drive, right?
We're thinking.
We're looking for the enemy.
And the infantry, the Royal Ulster Rifles, they're on either side.
Yes, yeah, somewhere.
Somewhere.
But we never saw them.
Can't see them.
No.
But they're going along the hills, the valley
well,
sides.
They might have stayed in the valley. You know, gone right over. But they were there somewhere, anyway.
So what happens on this typical... I mean, it's not, you know, it's the patrol we're concentrating on. What do you remember of it?
Yeah, it's quite warm all day, obviously. And then you eventually, obviously, which you're going to do, you find the enemy.
Now, what would happen? How would you encounter them?
Well, you see them, you spot them. You see, remember, I'm sitting at the top of a tank, and I'm looking around as far as I can, certainly 180 degrees. I'm not looking behind me. That's their problem, the guys behind me. But I'm looking about 180 degrees like that. And obviously, as you're going very slow. Remember, you're not doing more than 5 miles an hour, top whack. Probably slightly less. Because you can't go any faster, first and foremost, because of the valley. And secondly, because if you go too fast, you won't see anything anyway. And then suddenly you see the enemy, because you see a movement. As simple as that.
Now, is this positions, you know, trenches, or is this just a few...
No, this is bodies moving that were obviously moving somewhere, and you've spotted them.
Chinese or Korean? Or
oh, no, I would say Chinese. Yeah, they were dressed in K-pop, so I would say they were Chinese. They were better dressed than the Koreans.
Now, what were they doing? So what are they up to?
They were bloody running as fast as they could. They were trying to get away. So all we did is, once I spotted them, instruct the driver to stop, traverse the gun approximately to where they are, and then explain to the driver, the gunner, over the intercom, where they are. He's got to spot them. He fires a burst, and then you can see the tracer, and you take your life from there. Simple as that. And try and shoot them.
Use the main... Which are
no, only the machine gun. You're not going to waste main guns on about half a dozen infantry.
And you hit them or not? Or did,
not
you,
sure.
You wouldn't know.
Not sure. They disappear anyway.
Do you pursue them in the direction they go, or do you? What do you do?
No. You just then all you do then is you report back to the command what happened. Because remember, they could be about 3 or 4 miles behind you. All they've heard is the sound of the machine gun.
So you report that to the contact.
You report the contact
to who?
Yeah, that would be the commanding officer.